listening to the only daily talk show in North America covering the world of football. This is World Football Daily.
Yes, 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 yes! It hits the back of the net! Oh my goodness me!
The world's game.
Oh, you're beautiful! What a head, son! What a head!
Our religion.
Brilliant goal! What an equalizer!
Our passion.
Go, go, USA! Oh, it's incredible! You could not write a script like this!
World Football Daily serves up the best football talk 5 days a week.
Oh! You will never, ever see a game quite like this! Unbelievable!
Chelsea can't beat Galatasaray as Mourinho's men fall in Istanbul. A 1-1 draw despite Fernando Torres' fifth goal in 5 Champions League games, giving the blue side of London the lead early in that one. Real Madrid are magnificent as always, and is La Decima on the cards, a 6-1 drubbing of Schalke in Germany. And Madrid booking their place into the knockout stages, of the Champions League. And we've got Europa League action coming up tonight. Can Swansea get past Napoli in what would surely be one of Europe's biggest shock wins in a two-leg contest? We'll discuss that and more here on WFD. Welcome to the show. I'm Oliver the Juice Wilson, bringing you the news and the many views from around the world of football. Joining me today straight off the bat on the show, I'm delighted to say, is my main man, Rafa, mate. How are we on this fine day, Raf?
I'm well. I'm here to make the argument that Chelsea is the best team in England. If you only look at the facts, of course. I mean,
Rafa, yeah. And his facts. Well,
looking at the facts, there was only one team from England who scored in the Champions League over the past 2 weeks, and that would be, well, Chelsea. So they also managed to do that.
They also weren't playing Bayern Munich or Barca. I mean,
these are details.
Well, really. You want to talk about facts. You need to cover the details. You need to cover the details if you're going to talk about facts.
So instead of going to play Bayern Munich, Barcelona, whoever these teams are, I mean, they escape me at this point. But they actually went into the depths of hell.
Casting them off. These a Barca or a Bayern. I mean, who's worried about that? You know, what is... Jeez. Unbelievable.
By no means are they Besiktas, the big rivals to Galatasaray. I guess Fenerbahce is a big rival. Yeah. Oh well. Trust me, I've been listening to some of my Turkish Football Weekly juice. So,
nice. You've been getting ready for this one, I take it.
Just a little bit.
You wanted to see how Chelsea would do against the arguably the biggest might. In the Champions League, and I use arguably, you know, as in all sense of the word, because there is a big argument to say that they're not the biggest side in the Champions League, Galatasaray. you've been building up to this game. This was your big one for all the Champions League knockout first round stages. You know, forget Atletico AC Milan, forget Barca against Manchester City, forget Bayern Munich against Arsenal. This was the one, Chelsea against Galatasaray. And forget all of the kind of Mourinho loving and all that stuff. This was the one that you thought was going to be the biggest battle for raw, just all-out, aggressive attacking football between arguably two of the biggest sides in Europe.
Oh, but of course. Yes, Juice. Not that, but... To really kind of it does make it interesting. I mean, I do think that it was a tough job, a tough ask for an English club to go into Turkey. I think any team to really go into Turkey and get points is very difficult. Is it disappointing? I'm sure that they let in a goal. Yes. Should they have kept the lead? Yes. But I think that they're way better off. And you know, way more stable than if you were to look at the situation going on at Manchester United. I think exactly.
You can't use United as an example.
Yes, you can, because they're technically in Champions League still at this moment. The position that they're in, you know, is just much more. Yeah, they have much more life to them. when you look at all the other English teams left in the competition, Chelsea. Well,
of course they do. They've got a 1-1 draw. Everybody else has lost.
Waving their blue flag high in European competition
against arguably the weakest opponent that all English players have had to, all English teams have had to play though. So they are of course in a better position.
I don't know. I think Chelsea playing Olympiacos yesterday, you know, or 2 days ago, I think that would have been a much more different.
You think Chelsea would have slaughtered Olympiacos?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
Possibly.
I think they would. 2-0.
Yeah. Okay. All right. I'll give Galatasaray mad props over
Olympiacos. A little bit more credit.
Yeah.
I was obviously joking with the Barcelona Bayern Munich, but
of course I'm not going to hold you to that one, don't you worry.
Yeah. No. I mean, come on now. Still tough competition. A lot of head games being played, sure. But real kind of relationships and real drama coming out onto the pitch as well. So yeah, I think that Chelsea stepped up to the plate. Props to my man El Nino for actually getting on the scoreboard again.
You see the angle that his foot's at when he hits.
Yeah, it was really strange.
It's disgusting. You know, it's. It's almost bent over on itself. Wonderful athleticism, but it just there's a still picture of it doing the rounds around the internet and Twitter and Facebook and whatnot, and it's pretty horrible. It just looks like he's broken his ankle as he does it because it's just such an awkward angle compared to the rest of his leg. And I'm pretty sure ankles aren't meant to bend that way, but Torres providing the goal. I mean, he's a guy that's scoring in Europe. Scored against Benfica in the final of the Europa League last year. Scored 5-5 in the Champions League. He is, for European football, Chelsea's main go-to guy for get-out-of-jail goals kind of thing. I mean, last night, Chelsea were far more dominant in that first half against Galatasaray. And second half, defensively, really capitulated slightly, especially the two centre-backs, Terry and Cahill, had a bit of a shocking second-half performance against Galatasaray, and it allowed Drogba and Ilmaz to cause more problems. Schneider got more into the game, especially in that second half. And really, Chelsea should have made more of their advantage that they had in the momentum of the game, at least in that opening 45 minutes. But when you're looking for goals, Torres has bagged them a really important one, that away goal against Galatasaray last night, because it means at least, you know, they can go and at least take a 0-0 at Stamford Bridge against a Galatasaray side that, you know, I was very impressed with for that second 45 minutes. Mancini seemed to get them sorted, get some shape and get some real production to their play after half time, and you can put that down to the players, you can put that down to the manager, but either way, it was a different side that came out against Chelsea for the second half yesterday evening, and I think Torres' goal, when we look back, will be deemed a very critical one, I think, come the end of the second leg at Stamford Bridge, if Chelsea have got through.
Yeah, I mean, I would agree to that, man, but I was going to ask you that. Did you kind of sense, I don't know, that Mancini maybe, or Galatasaray even kind of suffered from Mancini's own hubris or, you know, coaching decisions. A lot of people were complaining that, you know, Galatasaray came out way too attacking. They had way too much of a, you know, of an attacking lineup on the field. They were bound to get kind of scored on, basically. And like you just said, they came back out in the second half and it felt like Mancini actually made some intelligent, you know, decisions. Obviously, the substitution at the beginning of the second half kind of helped. But would that have made a difference? You know, had he started off a little bit more defensively, had he not been so aggressive in his tactical lineup, might they have had a different result? I don't know. I don't think so.
No. I don't think that would have. Well, I mean, of course, it probably would have changed things, but you can say that with any football game, though, Raf, I guess. You know, if you went out with a different tactics and a different mentality in your team or a different group of players on the pitch, you know, things would obviously be different. What we have to do is take a look at last night's game in context and what happened. And what happened was Chelsea squandered opportunities in the first half. Torres took his, at least in the early going, and then it was really a great credit to Galatasaray, as I say, coming out in that second half and turning things around a bit. That's what I got from that. And I tell you what, the other tie, Schalke, what a joke!
what a joke that performance was. They were, this is a great Madrid side.
Yeah.
And with Bale, Ronaldo clicking, you know, when the front three grabs two each, you know that something good's happening there. And obviously Modric, Alonso in great form. Di Maria is finding his steps in this new role, playing off the front three in this Real Madrid side. And credit to Ancelotti there. But there was really no positives to come out of that for Schalke. Not even Huntelaar's goal at the end. I mean, what does that do? It means they only need to score... they still need to score six in the Bernabeu and hope that... that Madrid don't bag anything. I mean, it's a nightmare scenario for Schalke. It's absolutely awful. They got no hope in my eyes.
I think there were the odd opportunities where Schalke showed some sort of fight back. But massive credit, I think, to Iker Casillas, who stepped up and made a couple massive saves, in my opinion.
Finally beaten. How crushing was that late goal as well?
I mean, that was about the only kind of thing that I felt really bad about that. I mean, I thought it was a great goal, one. But I just felt that, I felt bad for Iker. I thought that he's been kind of, you know, put in an odd situation, put in an odd kind of, competition for a position. And, I think he has been stepping up and doing his part. And that, I think that goal kind of just stung a little bit for me. That's for sure.
Well, when you think about it as well, only playing cup games at the moment. And he played two games in 2013, league games in 2013, something like that. I mean, absolutely balmy the way Casillas has been treated, but you wouldn't say it's not right for Madrid considering the way that Diego Lopez has played in goal. But for him to be able to keep his concentration, keep his focus, I mean, I don't think it makes it easier on him to keep clean sheets in the way that he has done and to go for so long without conceding while playing, so intermittently. I think that makes it far more difficult. And I think most goalkeepers would testify to that, saying that, playing one in, one out, you don't get into a rhythm of things. You don't really get a flow going on. I'm sure he gets tested a lot at training. I mean, imagine being a goalkeeper at Real Madrid in training is pretty darn tough when you've got Bale, Ronaldo and Benzema firing efforts at you left, right and centre. And I think Schalke last night got a little sense of what Casillas probably goes through on a regular training day. But I think it's incredible that it's taken this long for him to get beaten in between the posts for Real Madrid, and to cap it, to lose it out in the 90th minute. One more game would have been really nice. One more game for Casillas. Although I suppose it's nicer as well that he didn't concede at home and is actually on the road. That he's done it probably a little.
Yeah, well, that and the whole like Huntelaar thing. I mean, considering he said he really wanted, he had something to prove, blah blah blah. It's just.
God, yeah, he showed down, didn't he?
Yeah, well, that's just it. It's like, great, good job.
Like, God, I'm gonna shove it down their throats when it's 6-0. Yeah. You don't want to anger me. Oh, when I'm at when you make it 4-0, that's when you really start to get on my nerves. Six. Oh, I'm so livid.
Here comes the fight back.
To be honest, Huntelaar, aside from the goal, was probably one of the better players last night. We were talking about Julian Draxler needing to kind of maybe step up and show his worth on a big stage against Real Madrid. And of course, Madrid dominated that game, absolutely bossed it. But Draxler was a touch disappointing for me last night. I didn't feel that he really got himself in the game enough, let alone got involved in the game by the players. I mean, Kevin Prince-Boateng, even when he came off last night, you saw the look on his face of just exactly what he was thinking about the whole affair from Schalke last night. Sat on the bench, jacket on, slumped over, just didn't want any part of what was going on for the remainder of that match. And there was plenty left, half an hour to go, and another two goals still to be banged in. And that back four was atrocious. I mean, they couldn't handle Bale and Ronaldo. And to the credit, who can when both those two players are playing on top form? Who can? But is it Madrid's to lose? Are we ready to say that yet, Raf? Or are we talking about Bayern are still the favourites?
Oh, Yeah,
that was that was impressive. Bayern,
just because the other reigning champions, they are pretty much invisible, in terms of being beat. I mean, it's hard to be touched there. Yes, you can tell me all you want that, you know, Arsenal were threatening them and they should have, would have, could have had a penalty goal, blah blah blah. It's not there. You know, the results aren't there, and until Bayern Munich are really kind of beaten and put to a sword, and I mean, yeah, I just don't see it happening. For me, it's theirs to lose. I think that they have that maybe the mental fortitude to kind of rise up to the occasion. Whereas I just don't feel that way with Real Madrid. I think that Real Madrid kind of, you know, lose their head a bit in bigger competitions, and because of that, you know, I'm just more susceptible to want to believe that Bayern Munich.
I think because we've been calling Bayern, and by we I mean the very large
the collective
we of the press,
footballing public.
Yeah, we've been calling Bayern the dominant machine because that's what it is. You know, it is. There is just so many connections that take place over and over again in their build-up play, and nobody can stop it from happening. You know, they don't change the way they play. Everybody knows how they're going to come at you, and you just can't stop it. It is a machine ticking over and over and over, doing the same process over and over again. And it's incredible to watch. It doesn't get boring at the moment because there's pace, there's fire to it, and it's impressive in every sense of the word. But with Madrid, yeah, you still don't feel like they've found that machine type fluidity in their play. It's taken a while for them to get to this point, I think, this season. They are in full flow though this season now. I think you have to give Ancelotti credit for that, because it's only taken him, you know, under half a year to get this Madrid side working in a way that you can compare it in dominance at least to a Bayern Munich. I mean, we haven't seen a clinical performance like this for a long time, I think, in the Champions League.
Goals, don't you kind of just feel like they were training ground goals, like you know, they were given up on, they were from lack of focus, they weren't, I don't know, I mean, it wasn't much of a test. It seemed like, you know, Schalke did just as much of the collapsing on themselves than, you know, Real Madrid pouring on the pressure. You know, I don't know, it's just I'm not trying to take away from Real Madrid's, you know, scoreline here. You know, I'm sure it is very tough to go get, you know, six goals at Schalke, but at the same time, you know,
yeah, but Madrid also went and got scored ten in total against Galatasaray in the group stages.
Sure.
You know, they banged four past FC Copenhagen very comfortably indeed as well. This isn't like a Madrid side that doesn't have consistency in it in Europe at the moment in time, which it obviously does. It's been arguably the league where things have gone slightly awry, and that's, as I say, all back on track now. This is a side that is looking as threatening to me as I mean, it always did on paper, but in performances as well, especially in Europe, as threatening as Bayern. And while everybody talks about, oh, Barcelona and Bayern, you know, I would take Barcelona out of that and put Madrid in their place at this point in time. I think Ancelotti has got they've got Tata Martino's kind of number pegged. You know, we spoke with Graham earlier on in the week, Graham Hunter, that is, you know, this is a Barca side that isn't able to play in that dominant style that we kind of have come to know, love, and adore. And you know, that's no problem. That's what happens with footballers. They get old, styles change, game styles need to change, and the team needs to adapt with it. But I just think Madrid, with the kind of useful crop of players that they have going forward, with the experienced heads, and slightly, you know, it's quite a wise midfield three, that, isn't it? When you think Xavi Alonso, Di Maria, and Luka Modric. Modric, who is able to control a game this season fantastically, as well as he did at Tottenham, and probably better. Alonso, a real old head on even calmer shoulders, just just able to dictate play in that same way Modric can, and obviously has the wealth of Champions League experience under his belt. And Di Maria, who's, you know, a long-time servant of the club and obviously great quality to his game anyway. You'd love that midfield three behind the kind of youthful Ronaldo, Bale and Benzema combination ahead of it. It provides stability across it, and they can play at as high a tempo as they want. They've got quality to come in off the bench, as we saw last night. And why not? Why can't Madrid be considered now far more of a front runner than Barcelona for the Champions League? And why aren't people saying it more than more often? Because, as I said, I've said all along, you know, Barca's just such a frustrating side to watch for the last 2.5-3 years.
Real Madrid are a frustrating side, you mean?
No, Barca are more frustrating to watch over the last 2.5-3 years. Because they're so slow. At least Madrid have been, you know, they've been like gung-ho all out attack. You know, slightly erratic at times. And under Mourinho, things got pretty crazy off the pitch as well as on it. But in general, they're a far more entertaining side to watch. And now they've got a consistency to back that up.
Yeah. I think the other thing is aside from Real Madrid, you also have your PSG, who's looking pretty damn unstoppable in their own right.
Above then? You know, we've seen all of these teams in the Champions League knockout stages now, the post-January kind of transfer window changes and whatnot. Who would you say, do you rate PSG ahead of Madrid in terms of chances? Give us, as they like to say, the power rankings of your top four for Champions League.
I'm going 1, 2, 3, four being... I'd go 1, Bayern Munich, 2, probably PSG at this point, just because I feel like they're putting a lot of pressure on themselves, just, you know, to get that title ASAP. And I know that La Decima means a lot to Real Madrid, and I know that that's kind of, you know, just as much pressure that they're putting on themselves as well. But I would put them 3 and then 4 Barcelona. That's where I'm at right now. That's my Rafa's power rankings for the day. That could easily change by 3 o'clock this afternoon. Just, I don't know, off of a whim.
I'm going. I'd say Munich top, Madrid second, PSG third, and I was very impressed by Dortmund's efficiency in Europe. Now, Dortmund over Barca, both have pretty shoddy defenses. Both can score goals going forward. That's a tough one to call at the moment. League play, you know, I'd never trust Dortmund. I wouldn't put a single bet on them for the remainder of this season. I don't trust them to grab a point against, you know, Hamburg, which obviously they didn't the other week. But didn't even get that. They got battered. But I do think European football, they still look like they've got things kind of sussed at the moment, Klopp. And maybe we're just seeing that switch once again of, all right, let's go for things in Europe. I mean, whether they can afford to do that or not, as I say, with the how close it is at the top of the Bundesliga. But, yeah, I just think in the Champions League, Dortmund have got their shizzle together, as they'd say, Raf. Other something that's kind of... caught my eye. We spoke yesterday on the website and put up some tweets about this new Nike boot that is about to be released. And you know how Rafa and I love our boot porn, as we've been talking about it. And I think I've found the kind of the equivalent of boot porn of clicking on, say, an adult video that you suddenly realise you really didn't want to watch. We'll talk about that in just a second, because I'm still undecided about it. But the Nike boot that we were talking about yesterday, the Magista, as it's set to be called. Raf, you've taken a bit of a dislike to it just because they're looking to kick away your beloved CTRs, my man.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I mean, there's a couple reasons why. Like, I'm a little bit hesitant on it. But go ahead. I mean, if there's some more introductory kind of stuff you'd like to say, feel free to say it.
Well,
I'll give you
we put it on the website and on the Twitter feed and stuff like that. The new video that sees a jet black pair of boots being worn by some players, and they include kind of Götze and Iniesta. And we've seen a picture of Iniesta training in a pair of these jet blacked out boots, so you can't really tell exactly what they look like. And we're expecting it is this new boot image is leaked recently back on the 14th of February of this Magista, as it's being called by Nike. And I think it's a pretty good looking boot. Apparently, all these players in the video, which I'm sure they haven't been paid to say at all, are saying that it's going to revolutionize football boots. It's going to, you know, help them on the pitch so much, etc., etc. You know, kind of a lot of the usual spiel that we often get from these sorts of things. We haven't had a chance to have a close-up look at them just yet. Apparently, Rafa is going to be sent a pair of whatever these boots are in the near future. And unfortunately, as we will talk about a little later on, there'll be a reason why Raf won't be able to tell us about that, I think, in the near future. But there is, I don't know. You have this by Nike. They're looking to bring out this, you know, fantastic supposedly new boot that's going to change football and whatnot. And then we've seen Adidas today release, and it's available on the website, this knitted boot, which, as I say, is like the equivalent of finding an adult rated movie online that you don't really want to watch, but you're also kind of intrigued by it. You know, you click on it, you realize what it is. I don't want to watch it. But then you're also like, but that is weird. I can't take my eyes off it. But it is like it is a really weird boot. I mean, I've been saying, you know, your gran could make them. You know, it does look like that. It's basically a knitted upper of the boot. You've got the plastic sole. You've got the knitted kind of upper section of it, which is meant to hug your foot like a sock. It gives the player closer control and feel. This is sort of what we've been seeing from the Adidas press release that we were sent today, and basically it's going to be the next dog's bollocks from Adidas coming out for boot design and the revolution of sports equipment. Now I find it, I don't know how I feel about how it looks, and we'll talk about that in just a second. And B, both Nike and Adidas seem to be talking about boots that feel like you're wearing a sock. Now, if I play football, ref, I don't want to feel like I'm wearing a sock. I love having, not Jamie Carragher, an old pair of clogs from the 1950s kind of thing, but I like being able to feel. It's why I preferred, like, personally, the Predators over a pair of Nike Adidas F50s, because the how light they are means you don't feel like you're wearing anything. And I want to be able to have, you know, not just the shooting zones and all that kind of malarkey, but just be able to feel like I've got something on my feet, as well as being able to control the ball. Not so heavy that you can't feel the ball when you touch it, really, or anything like that, but also kind of, you know, that nice middle ground. I'm like the three bears, the littlest bear who wants to find the mama bear, sorry, that wants to find the nice middle ground of the beds and whatnot. But you're quite a fan of this like sock idea, aren't you? You quite like it.
Well, I mean, I do. Here's the main kind of issues that I got is that, one, I feel like it's like the wave of where boots are going right now. Obviously with the Evo Power, and you've seen the video that I've posted on our Facebook and YouTube, whatever. The whole kind of marketing line behind that boot was that, you know, it was all about being closer to your barefoot. So I mean, like the marketing is with this, I think they maybe changed it a little bit from the barefoot feel to, oh, it's like putting on a sock, because that's the second, you know, nature thing kind of for any kind of athlete or person who puts on shoes and socks. It's just kind of like one and two, and you're taking away another one. I get it, Juice. I get it, and I think that there's potential there for it. Especially with these Adidas boots that you've sent me, they remind me kind of the feel that came with the F50 Tunits back in the day, and I really really enjoyed those, man. I really enjoyed those. There was a certain amount of flex, or not flex, but rigidity and stiffness to these boots, and the grip that it had because of the natural fibers and breathability of the material. It left a lot. You know, I felt like, you know, it was a great, great touch. The only time I didn't like those boots was when it was like kind of wet, inclement weather where I, you know, was being basically soaked up, you know, soaking up any and all kind of liquids on the field. And it just didn't feel right in my boot. I didn't like that. And it did definitely affect my, you know, my touch on the ball. So I'm very interested to see whether that's going to be, you know, how that's going to be addressed. I know that you had said that there's a special kind of
They've coated it all up and it's woven so neatly and all this kind of thing that basically there is no water leak through or anything like that, and it's all been designed so that it can be used in the most inclement weathers and whatnot.
Sure. Well, and I mean, I know that Nike has also had that technology with the all climate control, you know, material basically, where no matter the weather that you're in, you find yourself in, you're going to be kind of sound in your you'll have the same boot feel and a ball feel regardless of what kind of weather you're in. So with that said, I do kind of feel like, you know, they should have this pretty much dialed in. It shouldn't be an issue. I'm more thrown off about the fact that you had brought up, which was from afar, this Adidas boot, it looks like a brown boot. That's what it looks like. And then if you get up close to me, it looks almost like a friendship bracelet kind of a boot. And that's just, I don't know, it's just not me. I don't know. I like flash shoes. I like I can do a bold color. You know, I can pull off orange. I don't mind, you know, a bright color boot. I like the Samba color boots that Adidas have released recently with the Copas. But this, I think, is a little, it's just not, I don't know, again, it's not my style. I'd be more than happy to test it out, Adidas, if you'd like to send us some, you know, some of these boots. I'm always there to test out boots for you. You know, I have the soccer games to play still to, you know, to test these boots out, and I'm always one to spread the good word of a good, you know, boot technology. You know, how long I have to do that is a whole different question. But you know, I'm always up for free stuff from these guys.
Hopefully they'll send them my way first, Rev, but we shall see. I don't know, I just don't like, I like being able to have that feel and control rather than feeling like I'm wearing nothing at all, nothing at all, nothing at all, as Ned Flanders would say on the Simpsons. Let's move away from the boot porn, because if you want to check that out, check out worldfootballdaily.com and go to the blog section where you'll be able to see the new boots that have been released by Adidas. They'll be up at the end of the recording of this show, which will be in about, well, I guess about 10 minutes or so. You can have a look at it all there. Just finally, there's a few other bits that I want to talk to you about. We've also got to give our little announcement as well here on World Football Daily before we depart today. First and foremost, is this Moyes out tattoo the most ridiculous thing that you've ever seen in your life, or do you think it's one man's protest of trying to ensure that he gets his message across to the Manchester United boy that he's not happy about David Moyes still being in charge at United after the loss to Olympiacos this week?
It's absolutely ridiculous. Absolutely ridiculous. And as somebody who's recently gotten a tattoo, I can say that, you know, I don't know. I look at tattoos now just kind of, even with a little bit more kind of respect. I've always appreciated tattoos, Juice.
Yeah, okay.
I've just not been one to kind of, you know, jump at the idea of putting something on my body permanently permanently, basically, right? Yeah. Like that's what it comes down to it. And just generally the pain that you have to kind of go through is also something that's like, well, I mean, you're asking a lot here. I appreciate the dedication. I do, but man, you're just asking a lot, and God, it's there forever.
It sums up the short sightedness of football fans and football in general, really, getting this tattoo. Because
there's a lot, Juice. I mean, think about it. Like he's really willing to kind of go through life with this constant negative reminder about a mishap.
Well, that's what I mean. That's what I mean about short sightedness. You know, he's thinking in the short term. It's great. What happens? Best case scenario, Moyes gets sacked in a week's time for him. Then that makes his tattoo completely redundant in a week. Worst case scenario, Moyes sees out the remainder of the 6-year contract and does really well at Manchester United. Well, great. He's happy that United have done well, but he's got a tattoo now saying Moyes out, showing that he never backed the man that brought them eventually success after a troubled start. And all the in-betweens, you know, what? He want, 18 months' time, 12 months' time, when Moyes gets the boot come the end of his second season or in January next year, and he can turn around and say, told you, with a big Moyes out tattooed to his behind, or is it, you know, 3-4 months time when the tattoo becomes redundant in a summer? Either way, this is such a short-minded state, and it as I say, it sums up the fickleness of football and the people in football in general. Look, at the end of the day, Alex Ferguson put so much pressure on the club more than anything else to stick and keep faith with David Moyes as it goes through this transition. When he had his leaving speech at Old Trafford and said, you know, we need to have faith now in the new guy that's coming in. We need to give him support. You always gave me support. The club always gave me support. Even through the worst times, we need to remember those worst times and give David the support. The fact that he said that, and the club kind of has this long-standing tradition I don't want to say long-standing tradition, because the only reason this kind of notion that United are a different club to everybody else because they don't sack the managers the whole time is because Ferguson eventually brought so much success. But so much has been discussed about the fact that modern-day times Ferguson would have been gone, etc., etc., and that puts United on a slightly different playing field in terms of people's mindset about the club. You know, it's associated as a club where they do allow patience, you know, and they learn from their failures to become stronger than ever. You know, like the phoenix rising from the ashes, Manchester United will return stronger after learning from its mistakes. And therefore, if they sack Moyes after a season, it will tarnish that reputation that they have as a club, and they'll become suddenly just another club with money and that likes to sack managers quickly. Even though it's only one manager that they'll have done it to in recent years, that will still have that reputation because, again, footballers, football fans, people in football are short-sighted. And if they don't sack Moyes, if they give him the faith of 2-3 years and he doesn't produce anything, then you're up a creek without a paddle, because suddenly you're Manchester United, the side that has been reduced to a mid-table Premier League side. Now, I'm not saying that will happen, but I'm not saying that I've said I had faith in Moyes, and even my faith is dwindling, and I'm not even a Manchester United fan, and looking at this, trying to look at this objectively, and I like David Moyes, I like what he did at Everton, but the signs indicate of what Martinez is doing at Everton and what Moyes is doing at United now that, you know, maybe he is the wrong man for the job. But United are in a very difficult position. They will have to give him the remainder of this year. They will almost certainly give him a post-World Cup period and a chance going into next season. And United, I think, are in this difficult situation now of maybe ruining a reputation that they've built for themselves through the success of Ferguson, and Moyes going could really hinder that. And I think that's one of the things that makes United stand out as a better club, because they're renowned for consistency, whether it being consistently battling at the table, consistently not changing managers every 10 minutes, and consistently being able to bring in big players. And all of that is starting to look like it could slip away at the moment, and that changes the image of a great club like Manchester United. And I think that's something that is more worrying for United fans more than anything else, about how that looks and impacts on other teams. For Liverpool have been able to get away with not having this reputation of sacking managers, yet they've been through a few of them since Benitez went, and the fact that Hodgson went so quickly and Dalglish, you know, looked like this old dinosaur. I think that kind of helped them, because people said, oh, you know, they were the older generation that weren't able to fit in with the new style of football. Moyes doesn't have that excuse. United don't have that excuse, because he's done it at Premier League level in the modern game with Everton. So I think that changes it slightly. And, you know, it suddenly makes Liverpool look like the slightly more traditionalist club over Manchester United. Your thoughts on that would be fantastic. Let us know. Show at worldfootballdaily.com, at WFootballDaily on Twitter, 310-909-8483. It's the Rant Line in the Facebook page as well. Raf, let me hand you the microphone, because we are running out of time here. I know you had a very horrible night of being in the hospital looking after your nearest and dearest, but there is something that we need to get out of the way. It's kind of been hanging over the show for a few days now, which is maybe why there's been a slight mix up in a few bits and bobs this week, but I will let you do the honors of telling everybody exactly what it is.
Sure. Well, that was that's always easy, I guess. Basically, ladies and gentlemen, World Football Daily is coming to a close in one form or another, probably by the end of this month. And it really just comes down to business, I guess. When I kind of took over, but when we did kind of make the last batch of changes, they didn't really give us that long. The ownership of World Football Daily didn't necessarily expect us to thrive as we did, I guess, if that's even
a strong word.
Yeah, sure. So, you know, basically we were given 3 months and we've been around for about 18 months and we've fought and kicked and clawed our way as much as possible. But ultimately it's come down to just the fact that it's not a viable option for the owners of World Football Daily right now. And therefore, you know, I'm pretty sure, pretty positive that there will no longer be a World Football Daily come this next month. We will be ending the site and the subscriptions, I believe, as of the end of February. So, you know, keep
tomorrow.
keep in touch, I guess. We will be kind of obviously around. I'm a huge football fan. I know Ollie works in football, among other sports. So it's not like we are dying and, you know, dropping off the face of the earth. It's just that World Football Daily is just no longer. And, you know, I think it's tough for me considering the fact that I started this as a fan. I was a fan of the show. I listened to the show. I podcasted the show daily. I was a daily podcaster, somebody who was kind of regularly reaching out to, you know, the staff of World Football Daily and its crew to try and see when the latest show was going to be up, when I could podcast it, when I could. I literally scheduled my college days around it at one point. So, you know, and then to go as an intern and quickly kind of be brought in as a quote unquote producer was, you know, it was just a lot very quickly. You know, I worry about how people are going to kind of take it or think about it, and I know I shouldn't, but that is kind of where my mind is at this point. I do feel like, you know, I've just been a part of the downfall of this name and the company and its brand. And it definitely stings a little bit, but at the same time, I literally have been giving my all to this show, this group of people, this community who have been fantastic. Obviously, I mean, there's still hundreds of you guys out there who listen and pay for this product, and I appreciate that. I really, really do. I can't do anything more. You know, basically, it's just not a business sound venture at this point. And our business owners have been deciding to, they decided to pull the plug, basically. And that's where we're at currently.
As Rafa said, you know, when we stopped doing the live studio shows and I was asked to kind of do the hosting and stuff like that, it was on a very kind of short-term basis initially, and I think credit any listener will know how much Raf has put into this show over the last few years, and should give him all the credit for keeping this going as long as, you know, he and I have been able to, and I think we both feel very sad that it is coming to an end. You know, we've really, I think, both enjoyed the last, I've absolutely loved the last 18 months or so, being able to come and chat football with you guys and do all the kind of stupid stuff that we've done. And, you know, it's been a lot of fun doing it. And it's I think we both want to just say thank you very much to everybody who's emailed, tweeted, whether, you know, the haters as well, because, you know, there have been some haters. But, you know, to everybody that's got involved in the show, who's, you know, sent in those stupid jingles that we did back a couple of years ago, the Christmas period, things like that, the poems that people have sent us, you know, everybody who kind of gets in contact with us and who listens. And it's been an absolute blast, as I say. And we just hope that we can either find a way to, I know I definitely want to work with Raf again at some point and try and find a way to work together in some other project or something like that, or you know, we can catch up with all of our listeners at any point you know, I know Rafa, of course, is pretty active on the World Football Daily Twitter feed, but he obviously has his own Twitter feed as well, which you can catch him at Gears Rafa on Twitter, and myself at Juice_Wilson. And we're always happy to, you know, chat football with you guys, because at the end of the day, it's what we've been doing for the last 18 months or so on this show, and it's been an absolute
blast. And at the end of the day, I think, you know, ultimately we are fans, just like you guys, and that's what the show's always been about. It's about you know, a fan's perspective, a fan's show, really. And it's kind of where even Ollie had the opportunity to kind of take off his you know, his professional business hat and throw back on, you know, the kit, I guess, you know, the supporters kit and get back into it. You know, show his own kind of feelings and emotions about his own clubs. I mean, you know, it's been tough to kind of go through the dropping of Rangers to the second division.
And I hope I've made it tougher. Thank you.
The Owls dropping out of the FA Cup.
All right, that's just unnecessary.
You know, Milan having just a shit season.
Oh yeah, no, that's really unnecessary. There's no need to keep digging. I put in one low blow.
I can come up with a couple more if you want.
You know, having to watch Celtic, you know, lift that title every year, you know, it's great. That's been one of my highlights. No, and I think as well, you know, a big thanks to everybody. I want to thank everybody who I've worked with as well on the show. You know, of course, Raf, but also, you know, LVP, James Cranford, you know, Casey Kiernan, Sophia Martin, and a big thanks to anybody else who's been in the production studio and has hosted the show over everybody.
Huge thanks to all the people that we've talked to, obviously, and who've literally just donated their time over the years. I mean, the 4 years I've worked here, the 2 years that Juice has been a part of this project. I mean, you know, even before then, Juice kind of donated his time on many occasions to join our show. So yeah, I mean, it truly has been a pleasure, you know, being a part of World Football Daily, and some of the things that I've personally been able to do, and I think some of the things that Juice has been able to do have been really, really awesome. You know, we've got to see a different side of football on top of just the games that we've you know, appreciated, the people that we read and stuff. To be able to talk to these people in person over the phone, it's absolutely incredible to meet some of these guys. It is a great, great world to be a part of, and that's one thing I think I personally will never give up and get rid of. So for what it's worth, everybody, thank you very much for all that you've given me, and I hope that I was able to kind of be a part of your guys' life in one way or another, in a positive way. Hopefully not too many negatives. I'm sorry if I you know, told you too many stories about my daughter or other things like that. Random personal admissions of whatever. Yeah.
We will be back tomorrow for what we are expecting. We're still waiting for final word on some of this stuff and whatnot, which is a little peculiar, but what we are expecting to be our final show ever on World Football Daily tomorrow. We'll of course make sure there's time for a little bit of IKTS. I don't think we're going to have time to go through the whole of the season, but I'll tell you what we will do. We'll be giving you predictions on the World Cup, on all the major European leagues, and we'll predict a winner each for the MLS Cup as well, even though that's coming up in November. But hey, we might as well go out with a bang and go bold or go home, right? We'll leave it there for the show today. A big thanks to you guys for listening. As always, we will be back at the same time tomorrow. Apologies again for the slight bum note that we're leaving it on today, but we will be back for that final show, or what it's expected to be the final show, tomorrow on WFD. Remember, check out the website as well. You have a look at all the brand new boots that we've been promoting about the place, and maybe we can still snag a free pair to try and send out at some point later in the year. We will find out. But we'll see you tomorrow. Take care.